This week, we're going to talk about the light of Christ. I like that. The light of Christ. Well, I think the light of Christ is revealed to us in so many ways, and we're fortunate to have a lot of history about different things. Now, Bethel does not have any stained glass windows, but in some of the churches that I've served in the past, stained glass windows are beautiful. And the tradition of stained glass windows go back many years, way back even in the 27 BCE, which stands for Before Common Era, when the Mesopotamians and the ancient Egyptians began creating colored beads of glass. Now, they did that primarily for jewelry. But by the first century, the Romans began using colored glass for windows. But stained glass windows reached their height in the medieval Europe, when they were used to create massive and exquisite and intricate glass windows. And you can see now in the European Gothic cathedrals or in the abbeys, if you travel over there, they're beautiful. Well, we even have some beautiful ones in our own country. Some of the churches have them. And these windows feature depictions of Christian symbols, stories, and characters known as the Poor Man's Bible, because they taught those who either couldn't or wouldn't be permitted to read the scriptures through images and story. That's why they all came about. And it's amazing. But the ingredients for glass are sand and wood ash or potash. And these are melted into a liquid in various colored metals, powder that can be added to create the glass, which then would be blown, flattened, and fitted into iron frames. It's kind of a storyboard, if you will. The result was beautiful stained glass artistry. But, you know, I love the buts and the ifs. If you ever looked at stained glass either in a dark room or during a cloudy day, you can't see much except the dark-colored glass with black frames. It's only when the sun is shining through the glass or light is fixed behind the glass that these images emerge in all their beauty and glory. Light is the secret ingredient for revealing the biblical truth harbored within this glass. In Jesus' day in the Jerusalem temple, it was known as the pride of the Jewish people. Standing on a hill, its massive structure could be seen for miles. Within the court of the women, it stood 7 feet high, and golden candelabras, they now call them menorahs, all lamps that were bright enough to illuminate the whole city. These were often compared to the pillar of fires, or God's presence, that led the Israelites through the wilderness. And the illumination of the temple, this public visibility, represented for the Jewish people God as light of the universe, called the Herodian lamps during the Feast of Tabernacles. These would be lit celebrating God's eternal presence. So the temple, therefore, became a representative of a beacon. It's sort of like a lighthouse, if you would, in our modern thinking, of holiness or a symbol of endurance and blessing upon the Jewish people for everybody to see. The light helped others to see the house of God. And then during the Feast of Tabernacle, the Jewish people would build little huts to dwell in and celebrate and invite God's presence among them, just as it was in the wilderness when the Israelites carried a tabernacle in order to house God or the Spirit of God, and they would carry it around. Jesus, however, would offer a new and a different idea of how to think about God and the temple, and more importantly, about God's truth. In John chapter 8, verse 12, Jesus said to his disciples, "I am the light of the world. Anyone who follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Now, in Matthew chapter 5 that we read earlier, it says this, "You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. People do not light a lamp and put it under a bushel basket. No, they put it on a lampstand, and it gives light to the whole house. Another way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Well, I think this follows a lesson that we just heard from Jesus declaring that the temple would be destroyed, but he would rise it up after 3 days. Now, all this symbolism illuminates Jesus as both temple and light. And I think we'll later learn from the Apostle Peter that we're living stones to be built upon the foundation and the cornerstone, who is Jesus Christ. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 5. But here Jesus teaches that we need also to function as these powerful lampstands, so that his disciples, the truth of Christ, may be illuminated through all of us. Let your little light shine, as that little song says. And this way, others can view the truth and the presence of God within a dark and lonely and worrisome world. Now, I think our job as disciples is to help people see Christ's light and hope within their lives and within the world. And that light can help lift them from dark places, light their path forward, and help them to see that Jesus is by their side. No matter where they are going or what they're going through, Jesus is right by their side. For Jesus, righteousness is not accomplished by simply following laws or going through the motions of religious ritual. True righteousness is seen through the actions that reflect the glory of Christ, and that all people point to God's love and blessings upon all people. Now, Jesus is very adamant that his disciples not hide from their responsibility to serve as beacons of his promise to the world. They are, in a sense, taking on a role of those who point towards the holy, those whose spirits shine so brightly with the love of God that they brighten every space and illuminate the image of the story of God's plan for humanity. Now, I think the disciples' role is simply not one of shining a spotlight, however. I think their very souls must have shined with the presence of Christ within. Their character and their identity illuminated the truth that Jesus was preaching to all and all that they do. Now, I think maybe that's why the medieval artists often painted the light in the form of a halo. You've seen those pictures. It was like Christ's head, and there's a halo around. Or even some of the saints, they would put halos around their head to designate them as apostles or saints or martyrs of the church. They did not just point to the truth. They lived the truth within them. And for Jesus, transformational spiritual power was necessary in the one's call to be light within a darkened world. Not only do we require light in order to see the image of Christ in the stories and the saints who came before us in those beautiful cathedral windows, but those lights shine most beautifully within the surrounding darkness. You see, the darker the surroundings, the more vivid and striking is the light and the colors of those exquisite portraits of truth. In the same way, the light of Christ that we carry within us can be seen most vividly by those who live and feel bleak and dark. You see, you can light a candle in the daylight and see yourself through it, but it's not as striking as if you light a candle in a complete darkened room. You know what happens. The light transformed that dark room into a beautiful place that you can see. In that moment when darkness becomes illuminated, you can begin to see. It's almost an amazing thing. Even just striking a match in a complete dark room illuminates the whole room, doesn't it? It's the power of light. Perhaps that's why Jesus' message resounds so reasonably with those who dwell in the shadows, rather from illness or abuse or fear or despair, because when the light of Christ appears in their life through me or you or somebody else, it illuminates the truth of God's care and love and blessings and promise, perhaps for the very first time. You might allow someone to see, as Jesus said. Do not be sparing in showing the light of Christ within you. Be glad and be able to do it, because that light of truth and love and hope and peace and comfort and presence, the illumination of living color in the person of Jesus Christ, when He lives within you, you want to be able to radiate that love and encourage people and allow people to see how Christ's transformational power and the gift of life and all that can be possible when He enters into our world. Now, we know that Christ came into the world, but when He enters into our world, if you remember when you first accepted Christ into your life, your darkness that was around you or within you came to life, and that life of Christ started to generate, and it would shine that peace and joy throughout your whole being. That's how it is when you accept Christ into your life, and people of the world can see you. And that light of Christ is meant to be shared with others. And once we do that, plant those seeds of life, Jesus takes it from there. It's the most wonderful thing you ever seen. And I hope and pray that your life is a living story of His grace and truth. And I know most of you, and your life is a living story of His grace and truth. Now, it's hard sometimes to be able to share it, but we are required to share His love and His grace. And when somebody sees you or talks to you, you know, you can say, "Oh, yeah, the light of Christ." Well, yeah, and they might say to you, "How do you do all this thing called life? I know some of the challenges that you've been through. How do you get through it?" Well, it is the light of Christ. You see, that's the encouragement. We have a biblical mandate to encourage one another in the faith. And I hope and pray that you do a little bit of encouraging, not only today, but all the days of your life, and share the light of Christ with everyone. Just know that God loves you, and so do we. Have a good day.